Welcome to the Great Detectives of Old Time Radio. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham. If you have a comment, email it to me, box13 at greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives and check us out on Instagram. Instagram.com/greatdetectives. If you're enjoying the podcast, please follow us using your favorite podcast software. A reminder, as you're making your travel plans, check JohnnyDollarAir.com. JohnnyDollarAir.com is a Priceline affiliate, so part of the purchase price will benefit the Great Detectives of Old Time Radio with no additional cost to you. So when making your travel plans, remember JohnnyDollarAir.com. Well, now it is time for this week's episode of yours truly, Johnny Dollar. The original air date, December the 16th, 1956, and the title is The Rasmussen Matter.
From Hollywood, it's time now for...
Johnny Dollar.
My name is Hardy, Mr. Dollar.
Yes?
I'm returning the call you made to Mr. Ellis Rasmussen. If you will state your business, I shall be glad to transmit it to him.
You tell Mr. Rasmussen I'm an insurance investigator from Hartford and the matter involves a member of his own family.
Oh, young Mr. Rasmussen?
Yes.
Could you hold on a moment, sir?
I could.
Mr. Rasmussen will send a car for you at 6 o'clock.
Look, I can take a cab. Oh, well.
Bob Bailey in the exciting adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account. America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to the Universal Adjustment Bureau, Hartford, Connecticut. The following is an account of expenses incurred during my investigation of the Rasmussen matter. Expense account item one, $204.35. Airfare from Hartford to San Francisco to Los Angeles. Trying to compile the details of the Rasmussen case. I'd been on it 3 days when I was stonewalled in Los Angeles with a Holmby Hills address and the phone number of Ellis Rasmussen. At 6 o'clock, a liveried chauffeur in immaculate uniform stepped up to me at the desk.
Mr. Dollar?
Yes?
My name is Stauffer, sir. I have Mr. Rasmussen's car outside.
Well, gee whiz, Stauffer.
Ain't it the truth, sir?
A few minutes later, when we turned into the lush green Holmby Hills section, I had a suspicion I was about to deal with a bona fide millionaire. When we parked in front of the big two-story colonial home and a man with graying hair and swallowtail coat stepped out of the door, well, I knew I was going to meet the real article.
I'm Hardy, sir.
Hello, Hardy.
Mr. Rasmussen is waiting for you. This way, please.
We stopped in front of a huge paneled door. Hardy tapped on it once, then pulled on the knob. As we entered, a tall man with a shock of pure white hair rose from his chair and turned toward us.
This is Mr. Dollar, Mr. Rasmussen.
I want about 4 fingers of sour mash. What do you want?
You took the words right out of my mouth, Mr. Rasmussen.
Very good, sir.
He's a pretty nice fellow.
We're all pretty nice fellows around here, Mr. Dollar. Sit down.
Thanks.
Could you hand me that lighter?
Oh, sure. Here.
Thank you. What are you doing in Los Angeles?
Why, Federal Underwriters of Hartford wrote a blanket policy for all Imperial Rubber Company employees. Your son was an executive with Imperial when he was killed in Malaya last spring. Federal owes his widow $25,000.
I don't know where she is, Mr. Dollar.
I see.
I doubt if you do. Let me put it this way. I never met the young lady. Fred married her one night in Elko, Nevada. 2 days later, they were on their way to Malaya. 6 months there, and the development station was raided by guerrillas one night. And I suddenly no longer have a son. Have you eaten your dinner, Mr. Dollar?
Oh, I wouldn't want to trouble
you. Hardy, set a place for Mr. Dollar.
Very good, sir.
Well?
Well, I thought she might phone me when she got back to the States. She never did. Never a letter, nothing. I'm old and sick, but I still want to see the girl my son married. It's not an easy thing to lose a son, Mr. Dollar. And I lost a good one. I lost the best son a man ever had.
I'm sure you did, sir. To your son.
To Fred.
During dinner and afterward over coffee and liqueurs, I listened to the story of Ellis Rasmussen's life. It came from the lips of an old man who was dying, but in whose eyes I could see reflected the memories of a brawling, bustling life that started in an Oklahoma oil field and moved to Alaska and Arabia and Africa. More and more during the talk, I began to know his lost son. For in everything the old man had to say about himself, I could sense an unmistakable reflection of his son. Finally, I thanked him and left.
If I may say so, I do hope you'll call soon again, sir. Mr. Rasmussen enjoyed your visit very much. I haven't seen him so much like his old self since we received the terrible news of young Mr. Rasmussen's death.
He must have been quite a man, Hardy, young Fred Rasmussen.
Yeah, he was, sir. All of us miss him dreadfully. None of us ever met Mrs. Rasmussen, and we were most anxious to receive her, especially after young Mr. Fred's death.
I imagine so.
The car's all ready, Mr. Dollar.
Good night, sir.
Good night, Hardy.
Fine night, Mr. Dollar.
Yeah.
Stauffer.
Yes, sir?
I didn't want to press the point with Mr. Rasmussen, but now maybe you can straighten me out. Did he approve of his son's marriage?
Let's put it this way, Mr. Dollar. Mr. Rasmussen approved of Mr. Fred. And if Mr. Fred got himself married, then Mr. Rasmussen approved of the girl. Between them two, they had that kind of understanding. Real people.
Expense account item 2, $1.98, telegram to Personnel Division Imperial Rubber Company requesting a copy of all information they might have on Laura Olson Rasmussen. Item 3, $6, one long-distance phone call to the Universal agent working the case in San Francisco.
Mrs. Rasmussen left the Malaya Peninsula by boat from a town called Coschetti 3 days after the news of her husband's death. A week later, she booked plane passage in Hong Kong with Trans-Pacific Airlines. She changed planes in Honolulu. She cleared the Port Authority in San Francisco. From there on, we lost her.
Get a list of all the passengers who were on that plane.
Okay.
Get someone checking the hotels in the Bay Area. She might have checked into one when she hit Frisco.
Okay.
Now listen, we're looking for a woman whose husband was brutally murdered about 2 weeks before she got back to the States. If she's anything like I think, she was probably about at the end of a rope. Now start asking questions at places where people like that go.
Right.
On Wednesday morning, I rented a car. That's item 4, $25, and made the rounds. First stop, Los Angeles Board of Education. By 4 o'clock in the afternoon, I had found 35 Laura Olsons who had attended public school in Los Angeles and were more or less in the proper age bracket. The next day, the folder arrived from Imperial Rubber Company. Among other things, it contained a passport picture and a complete description of Laura Olson Rasmussen. She was a blonde girl with a pouting, sultry kind of mouth and wide, dark eyes.
You down there.
Yes?
What do you want?
I'm looking for Mrs. Frances Olson. Are you Mrs. Olson?
I don't want to buy nothing.
Do you have a daughter named Laura Olson?
Are you a policeman?
No, I'm an insurance investigator. I'm trying to locate Laura Olson Rasmussen.
Well, how'd you get this address? What's that?
A picture of her.
I see. That's my Laura. What about her?
I've been trying to locate her for some time. Is she here?
No, she ain't here. She ain't been here for 5 years.
Do you have any idea where I can find her? Friends, maybe? Other relatives?
You say her name's Rasmussen now?
Yes, she married a man named Fred Rasmussen.
Married? Well, ain't that just something?
You didn't know your daughter had been married, Mrs. Olson?
How would I know? How would I know anything about her?
Saturday at noon, a registered letter arrived from the agent in San Francisco containing the list of passengers who had been on the plane with her. Three of the names were in the Los Angeles area, including a Mr. Oberlin, who lived in Pasadena.
For sure, I remember her. Real pretty. We sat together all the way from Honolulu. What's up?
We're trying to locate her, Mr. Oberlin. Did she happen to mention her plans when she returned to the States?
Plans?
You know, what hotel she might be staying at in San Francisco? Or if she was going on to another city?
No, not her.
You say that very emphatically.
Yeah, I guess I do. You didn't have to show me a picture. You know, a guy always prays he'll meet someone like her on a plane, you know what I mean? Yeah, live it up. Yesterday's gone, she said tomorrow ain't here, and the only thing we got is today. Yeah, we had a swell time.
You're sure about this?
We were pretty chummy, pal, if you want the truth of it.
Mr. Oberlin, did she mention anything about being in Malaya before she boarded that plane?
Uh-uh.
Then she didn't tell you that her husband had been killed a week before.
Killed? Oh.
He was murdered by guerrillas in Malaya.
No, she didn't mention that. She didn't mention that at all, Mr. Dollar.
Johnny Dollar.
This is Hardy, Mr. Dollar.
How are you, Hardy? How's Mr. Rasmussen?
He's not so well, sir. That's why I called. Could you possibly find time to visit him?
Tonight?
May I send a car right away?
Is it serious?
He's dying, sir.
I knew why he wanted to see me. Have you located my daughter-in-law yet? No, I haven't located her, Mr. Rasmussen. But I know something about her. I know she drank whiskey and flirted with a fat salesman on an airplane all the way from Honolulu to San Francisco. I know her mother's a drunk. I know she didn't think enough of you or your son to contact you or anybody else when she got back. Mr. Rasmussen, it looks to me like your daughter-in-law's a first-class bum.
Act two of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, in just a moment. Our daily lives are sharply affected by world news. And for a complete roundup of the news every single weekday evening, just keep your dial on CBS Radio for the news broadcasts of our famous CBS newsmen, Edward R. Murrow and Lowell Thomas. Hear up-to-the-minute news with Edward R. Murrow and Lowell Thomas on CBS Radio. Now, act two of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, and The Rasmussen Matter.
There was a black coupe with MD on the license parked in the driveway of the Rasmussen house when we pulled up. In the bedroom, a silvery-haired man in a black suit was sitting beside the bed that held Ellis Rasmussen. He was introduced as Dr. Butler. Then I shook the hand of Mr. Rasmussen. Someone suggested that Dr. Butler might like to use the library for his calls. And I was alone with the old man.
If you want some whiskey, I keep it in the sideboard over there.
Not now, thanks. I wish I had some news for you, Mr. Rasmussen. We're finding out things, but we haven't found her yet.
What things?
Oh, things. Nothing important.
Dollar, if I judge you right, you know your business. And if you haven't found my daughter-in-law by now, you've certainly found out what kind of person she is. So tell me.
I haven't met her. I don't know.
You're being evasive.
I don't work for you, Mr. Rasmussen. I'm an insurance investigator trying to locate a woman and pay off a claim. If I don't find her, the case will just have to sit. Unless you or someone else concerned makes a report to missing persons. Then the cops can take over, and maybe they should right now.
My son was a fine man. I can look back on all the years I had with him and be proud of every year and every day. He married a girl named Laura Olson. I don't know where she came from or who she was. But I know my son wouldn't have married her unless he loved her, unless she loved him in return and was worthy of his love.
You know a lot, Mr. Rasmussen.
Perhaps I should go to the police.
No. No, don't do that. We'll find her, Mr. Rasmussen. We're getting it narrowed down. Well, I'd better leave now.
As you say. Mr. Dollar.
Yes, sir.
I want to see her.
Yes, sir.
I'm sorry I talked to you the way I did.
Phone call for you, Mr. Dollar. Would you like to take it in there?
Oh, yeah, sure. Keep an eye on him, Hardy.
Trust me, sir.
Johnny Dollar.
This is Officer Daly, Los Angeles Police.
Oh, yeah.
You the insurance guy looking for a Laura Olson Rasmussen?
Yeah, have you got anything?
We got her.
Huh?
She's here with the rest of the girls in the drunk tank.
A drunk tank will always smell of disinfectant. This one was no different. There are no bunks, no chairs, no blankets, no nothing. So you stand or sit on a concrete floor and wait for something to happen. The legal period is 24 hours. You get rebooked or you get released. It all depends.
What's the story on her, Dollar?
I've got a check for $25,000 for her.
Gee, insurance money?
Yeah.
Quiet! Quiet in there! All right, quiet down! You girls better learn to get along.
Which one?
Back there, sitting on the floor.
Oh, good. What's the situation?
If somebody comes up with bail, they can have her.
Expense account item 7, $100, bail. While I was waiting around, Officer Daly broke open a file on her. A dozen aliases, a dozen charges, and one conviction for shoplifting. A career of petty thievery that began at the age of 16 and ran up into a 22nd year. Expense account item A, $35, telegrams. I sent wires to all parties concerned, all parties except Ellis Rasmussen, ordering a stop on their activities since Laura Olson Rasmussen had been found.
Over there.
Who are you?
My name's Johnny Dollar.
Thanks for getting me out. Why?
I did it for a friend.
Friend? I didn't know I had any.
Expense account item 9, 20 cents, 2 cups of coffee. We had it in a diner across from the women's section of the main jail. I looked at Laura Olson Rasmussen while she drank the coffee. Looked at the blonde hair and the wide eyes and the pouting mouth. Looked at the woman who had once been the wife of Fred Rasmussen.
What's the catch, mister?
No catch.
You put up $100 for me. I don't know you from a load of coal.
No, you don't. Where do you live?
I've been staying at the Piedmont Hotel. You know where it is?
No.
No, not many people do. Especially people with clean shirts.
What have you been doing since you got back from Malaya?
I've been getting along. You got something to do with Fred? You know about Malaya.
I know about a lot of things. I've been looking for you for a month.
So what?
Why didn't you contact your father-in-law when you got back?
Why should I? What would he care about me? He never met me. What do I mean to him?
Right now, since he no longer has a son, you mean everything to him.
You're kidding me, mister.
I wish I was kidding you. I wish to heaven I was kidding you.
Well, what now?
Oh, I want you to come over to my hotel with
me. Oh, now look.
To sign some papers. I have a check for $25,000 for you.
Who was that?
Your husband was insured. You're his beneficiary. All you have to do is fill out an application. I'll give you the check.
I don't believe it.
It's true. Come on. Expense account item 10, $2, cab fare to my hotel. I took her upstairs with me, stood over her while she filled out the necessary papers. Outside of that, we didn't say a word. Johnny Dollar.
This is Stauffer, Mr. Dollar. Hardy asked me to phone you to see if there's any word.
Oh, yes.
Well, what'll I tell him, Mr. Dollar?
Tell him No luck yet, Stauffer. How's the old man?
About the same, sir. Counting on you, I think.
I'll talk to you later.
Yes, sir.
Here you are.
Okay. Thanks. Here's your check.
Anything else?
Nope. That's it.
Okay. See you around sometime.
Sure.
Fred told me about a man named Stauffer who worked for his old man for years. Was that him on the phone just now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't know what I was going to say to the old man, but I did know I was hoping that if Rasmussen had to die, that he'd die before anybody told him the kind of daughter-in-law I'd turned up. I didn't want to be in on that. Expense account item 11, $83, hotel bill. I checked out at 5:30, picked up my airline tickets at the desk, that's item 12, then sat around the lobby for 5 minutes. Item 13, two drinks for myself.
Mr. Dollar?
Yeah? Oh.
I read in the paper that Ellis Rasmussen is dying. Is that true?
That's true.
Mind if I sit down?
Suit yourself. What are you drinking?
Nothing. I know why you didn't tell them you found me, and I don't blame you. If Fred's dad is anything like Fred was, then I know how you felt finding me the way you did.
Let's forget it, Mrs. Rasmussen, shall we?
I'd like to meet Fred's father.
So you want to meet him, huh? The human thing would have been to see him when you came back. But not a line, not a word. That old man in that house knows his son was really a man. And on that basis, he believes, without seeing you, that his son married a real woman. He had love and sympathy and help and devotion and all the things you don't seem to have any use for waiting for you in that house. He... Oh, never mind.
I loved Fred. Loved him from the first minute I saw him. You know what I was doing when I saw him? I was serving cocktails in a place like this. He didn't ask me what kind of a family I came from, whether I was good or bad. He just put one of those big arms around me one night and said, "You're mine." He said that to me. He said it because he loved me. No one ever loved me. No one. But he did. I told him who I was and where I came from, and all he said was, "You're with me now." We went to Malaya together, and I never knew in all of my life what I knew then, how it was to be wanted by someone who was decent, kind. And then he was killed. He told me one afternoon when I was in Cachetti. I took a boat, and then I took a plane back here.
Go on.
I want to see Fred's father. I took a car to the house, and I saw what kind of a house and what kind of people his family were. I didn't go in. Couldn't you see me, cheap, rotten, dirty little me? Couldn't you see me walking in there and saying, "I'm me"? Couldn't you see that mother of mine moving in? What would that have done to the old man? It would have crushed out his whole memory of Fred. But don't think, Mr. Dollar, I haven't got my memory, too. I didn't drink that away. I was loved by a man. And I loved him back. I've still got that.
I'm going out there pretty soon. Would you like to meet him?
Do you think I can?
I think so. I think so very much.
Oh, Mr. Dollar, I've been waiting in the lobby. I thought you might be here. How do you do, miss?
Stuffer, I'd like you to meet Mrs. Rasmussen.
Well, my, my. I'm mighty pleased to meet you. The boss will be mighty happy.
She dried her eyes in the car. I didn't say much. She didn't say much. But in the half hour it took to get out to Holmby Hills, something happened to her again. The something that must have happened when the big arm went around her shoulders the first time.
Good evening.
Mrs. Rasmussen, Hardy.
How do you do, Mrs. Rasmussen? We're very happy to see you.
Thank you, Hardy. Fred spoke of you often.
That was kind of Fred. This way, please.
Come in, come in.
I think you can introduce Mrs. Rasmussen, Mr. Dollar. Ring if you need me, sir.
I'm scared.
Laura, if there ever was a man for you not to be scared of, it's that man in there.
Oh, how can I tell him about myself? I've been in jail. I can't.
Watch.
Well, Mr. Dollar, come in. I've
brought someone for you to meet, Mr. Rasmussen.
Come here. You'd be my son's Laura. Yes, you're Laura.
Hello.
Yes. Oh, now, there, there, here, here. Now, look, look, us Rasmussens mustn't meet like this with tears.
There's so much I have to tell you.
No, there's nothing you have to tell me.
What?
Let me put my arm around you. There. Now, feel it. Mm-hmm. You're my daughter. Do you understand that?
Oh, yes.
Then that's all the explanations we need between us. Yes. Hardy. Hardy.
Yes, Mr. Rasmussen?
Bring Mrs. Rasmussen some brandy, I think. And I'll have some sour mash, Mr. Dollar.
Sure. Make mine sour mash, too, Hardy.
Very good, sir.
Expense account item 14, 40 bucks, miscellaneous. Item 15, $35, stenographic. Expense account total $1,965. Remarks? The old man's got a few weeks more. Laura's moving into the house with him to take care of him. She won't be telling him a lot of things about herself. She doesn't have to. You should have stood there like I did and seen that big arm go around her shoulder when he said, "You're my daughter." Yeah. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Our star will return in just a moment. Folks abroad want to know more about us Americans, how we live, how we eat, what we do in our leisure time. You know something? You can help promote international goodwill by corresponding with someone abroad. For the name of a correspondent, write to Letters Abroad, 45 East 65th Street, New York. That's Letters Abroad, 45 East 65th Street, New York. Stay tuned for 5 minutes of CBS News to be followed over most of these same stations by the FBI in Peace and War. Now here is our star to tell you about next week's story.
Next week, one cute tiny little mouse, that's right, mouse, almost scares a big insurance company out of business. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, originates in Hollywood. Written by John Dawson, it is produced and directed by Jack Johnstone. Heard in tonight's cast were Virginia Gregg, Gene Tatum, Eric Snowden, Roy Glenn, Will Wright, Frank Nelson, and Jack Crucian. Musical supervision is by Amerigo Marino. Be sure to join us next week, same time and station, for another exciting story of yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Dan Cubberly speaking.
Welcome back. What a moving story. I actually listened to it twice today. I also had my wife listen to it after our son went to bed. And she does not usually listen to these things, has trouble following audio dramas, but she was very moved and engaged by the whole thing. This is one of the most surprising episodes of an old-time radio program I've ever heard. It's really unusual for the Johnny Dollar half-hour era. While the serial era could have some profound stories like the Nick Schern matter, the Forbes matter, or the Valentine matter, the self-contained stories tend to be more simple. Although there were a variety of episodes told from hard-boiled stories to puzzle mysteries to amusing tales, and some that are a bit sweet and charming, nothing hits near as hard as the Rasmussen matter. Rasmussen and his household radiate warmth. So often, Johnny deals with phonies, snobs, and greedy people, so Rasmussen is such a change of pace that it's both refreshing and a bit startling. The story gets us invested in him and his last wish. Johnny is understandably reluctant to disillusion him. We don't meet Mrs. Rasmussen at her best. Just like in the Broderick matter five-parter we played about a year ago, it seems like this is a case of someone who didn't live up to expectations, who wasn't the person that someone thought she was, and was a bad apple. But Johnny's judgment and ours is challenged as we're confronted with someone who has experienced the power of love to change you and what happens when that love is ripped away suddenly. The ending is just beautiful and speaks to the greatest human longings, to be loved without explanation, despite our mistakes. It's definitely a story that still connects with people today. There were quite a few comments on the original episode we posted a decade ago, as well as other YouTube channels that featured the same episode where people talked about how moving it was to them. Even someone who says they typically only listen to old-time radio for camp entertainment was moved by it. People shared it with their friends and talked about how it really spoke to them and their life experiences. The writer appears to have been E. Jack Newman, as it was written under the pseudonym John Dawson, which was used for Newman scripts that were reworked into five-part serials. I have to say that the piece is strikingly different from anything else I've heard or seen from Newman, who wrote a lot of noirish pieces during the hard-boiled era of detection over radio, and whose work over Johnny Dollar was most often recycled from other programs that he'd written for. Newman was also a prolific television writer. He was the creator of Police Story, and he won an Edgar Award from the Mystery Writers of America for his TV movie, The Berlin Affair. That doesn't mean he was limited to writing mysteries. He did write a few episodes of Romance and also of the Hallmark Hall of Fame, but again, this feels very different from those. If this is a reused story, I would imagine that it may have come from Nightbeat, because it's the only other series that I could think of that might tell a story like this. Newman is known to have written at least four episodes of Nightbeat, and there are quite a few episodes missing from the 1951-52 season of Nightbeat. We will never know for sure unless someone either finds an episode that this was adapted from or finds the script. While this is of historical interest, it's obviously not necessary for enjoying the story. It's hard to imagine that a Nightbeat take on Newman's story could have been better than what we get here. It's beautifully acted with one of Virginia Gregg's best acting performances. Bob Bailey gets some great material to work with, and there's a solid supporting cast that did a great job bringing this story to life. It remains one of the most outstanding single episodes I've ever heard. One technical note worth talking about is the drunk tank scene. In his book, The Who Is Johnny Dollar Matter, John Abbott notes Lee Milway and Joan Mitchum are noted in the copy of the script he looked at as being cast as girls. Neither were actresses, but worked for CBS. They likely came in and lent their voices to provide the voices of the other women in the drunk tank. Virginia Gregg and Jean Tatum were the only actresses in the cast and could hardly become an entire drunk tank full of women on their own the way they recorded back then. Today, for voice recording scenes like that, the British recording company Big Finish, and I assume other companies as well, has actors in the studio record what are called wild tracks, where they voice crowds and various groups of people, you know, whatever they're doing, whether it's milling about or running in panic. The actors will do their best to sound indistinct or to sound different. In post-production, these can be mixed with software and altered to create a very large crowd from a very small number of actors. Under such conditions, Virginia Gregg could have probably done that by herself, but technology was not there in 1956, and they did a good job making it real with just a little help from some folks working over at CBS. All right, well, listener comments and feedback, and we start out today on Spotify with this comment from Harrison. I don't know if the individual episodes are better than the serials, but Johnny certainly is getting better at solving the case in less time. Ha! Great episode. Well, thanks so much, Harrison. And then had a comment from Saysoff, who writes in regarding the Markham matter over on YouTube. Good episode, and here are a couple of things that I find interesting about it. First, Frank Nelson's character is interesting. Normally, when he appears on Johnny Dollar, it's in his straight dramatic role, in which he speaks with his normal, more baritone voice. In this episode, he played a more lighthearted role and spoke in the voice that he always used on more lighthearted shows like Jack Benny and Jeff Regan. Good point, Saysoff, and we kind of heard that one in this episode with how he voiced the sergeant. Secondly, I thought it was interesting that CBS was promoting the Jack Benny program in the mid-episode advertisement. By this time, the Jack Benny radio show consisted of nothing but reruns from previous seasons, and Jack Benny was doing all of his new shows on television. The fact that the ad mentioned Mr. Kitzel indicates that the upcoming show would be one that was quite old. Of course, this would be the final season for the Jack Benny radio show. It would be replaced the following spring by the ill-fated Stan Freberg show. Well, thanks so much, Saysoff. And that is interesting because typically throughout the golden age of radio, there were not reruns, but towards the end, you not only had CBS doing Jack Benny, you also had NBC, which had been rerunning Dragnet since the end of the series in 1955. It continued to air and repeats in 1957. And so those were the first, you know, long-term reruns. The other big example of reruns, you know, you get in the mid-1950s. In 1953, you had CBS rerunning Richard Diamond, and then you had the re-syndication of West Coast episodes of Let George Do It in upstate New York and in Canada by an East Coast radio syndicator. But reruns did not come till the very end. Another listener notes, not only do we get Frank Nelson as a sidekick, we get John Daner. He was one of those voices that's instantly recognizable no matter the part. My first exposure to him was when he was on the Doris Day show in the latter seasons as her boss. Arguably one of his best roles was on the woefully short-lived but brilliantly and so far ahead of its time Sam Peckinpah series The Westerner, starring Brian Keith, arguably his greatest role too. John was in 3 of the 13 episodes. Oddly enough, I've tried to listen to him in the radio edition of Have Gun Will Travel, but I just can't get past the fact that role belongs to Richard Boone. Thanks for the comment, and John Daner definitely has a distinctive voice. He was, of course, in quite a few of the serials, but one thing with the half-hour episodes is that it does give actors a chance more to stand out than being, you know, lost in like the dozen actors who might appear in a given serial. Now, I enjoyed the Have Gun Will Travel just fine. I don't think it was as good as the television program, though not really down to Daner's acting. And he definitely has a different take on Paladin. Now, if you're not into the idea of another actor playing Paladin on the radio, you might also try another series Andrew has, Frontier Gentleman, in which Daner also stars. The only thing we played in which he played the lead role is he did a pilot for a series called The Judge, which you can find on our Rare Detectives feed or just by searching the YouTube channel for The Judge. Then there's a comment from Alex, who writes in regarding the wounded lieutenant. I wonder about the likelihood of a local waiter whose main language was not English parsing the reference from a Kipling poem. Well, Alex, obviously it happened. In all seriousness, it's a fair point that the odds were not great. But I think that the Office of War Information would say, whatever the chance, why risk it? Why risk talking openly when you never know who could be listening? And there are lots of ways you could imagine it. It could be a situation where the waiter had a secret past and would have known about it. Another possibility is that he may have made sense of a couple of the clues, but not the Kipling thing, and repeated it to his contact, and his contact knew how to parse the Kipling thing. But it's a fair observation. And thanks so much for asking, Alex. And then we have a couple of comments from our listener survey. And listener writes, I really enjoy the Johnny Dollar episodes and appreciate them finding a home on your platform. Thanks so much. And then another listener writes, takes you back to a simpler time. So glad to be of help. Now it's time to thank our Patreon supporter of the day. And I want to go ahead and thank Chris. Chris has been one of our Patreon supporters since August of 2019, currently supporting the podcast at the Shamus level of $4 or more per month. Thank you so much for your support, Chris. And that will do it for today. If you're enjoying the podcast, please follow us using your favorite podcast software. And be sure to rate and review the podcast wherever you download it from. We'll be back next Tuesday with some previously uncirculated episodes of Squad Room, and next Friday with another episode of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. But join us back here tomorrow for Dragnet, where...
Here it is. Following 4 men wanted for robberies, auto thefts, and safe burglaries in San Francisco Bay Area. Cliff Small, 19. George Shum, 20. Both escaped from Preston. Julius Carver, 18. Fred Malik, 20. Both Army deserters.
Well, that checks out with that APB from SF last week.
What do the records look like?
Small shot an Army captain during an argument at a bar. On 2 capers, these men shot it out with us and escaped. Information shows all 4 left for Los Angeles several days ago. Driving stolen car, blue Chevrolet, probably using cold plates.
Mm-hmm. Let me see those mug shots.
In here.
Hmm. Well, now we know who we're looking for. Brother, tell us where?
Just a couple of nice girls that got mixed up with the wrong guys.
Hey, take a look at these pictures, will you, Tony?
Oh, the mugs from San Francisco.
Yeah. Says they're in a stolen car, cold plates.
That's how these girls were picked up, in a hot car.
Huh?
I hope you'll be with us then. In the meantime, send your comments to Box13 at greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives. Check us out on Instagram, instagram.com/greatdetectives. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham, signing off.